Welcome back to the Breakside Podcast, here for episode 48. This is your ultimate destination for in-depth collegiate and professional Frisbee discussions and interviews. I'm your host, David Adamitis. This episode's guest was one of the original players in the 2012 Indianapolis Alleycats team. He is now entering his second year as head coach of the Alleycats. Introducing Drew Shepherd. Drew, thanks for being here. How you doing?
You're welcome. I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing fantastic. I'm really looking forward to diving into this discussion. I'm familiar with the Alleycats from having Cam Brock on and Will Wedengal on both last summer, and love the organization. Got to go to the games last summer as well. And it's a really fun atmosphere. So really excited to dive in, especially at this time of the year when things are really ramping up. The league's excited. The Frisbee community is really excited for the start of the UFA season. So with that in mind, you just want to share with me the anticipation or excitement from your end as you gear up for the start of the season. How are you feeling for things?
Yeah, we host about this time of year a scrimmage, which is either against another UFA team or, as was the case this year, kind of interest squad, but also kind of best from around the area that's maybe not playing with us this year or retired or whatever. And it gives us a chance to sort of work out the angst, kick off the rust, things like that. So that was just last weekend. And that really kind of marks, that's like the waypoint in our preseason journey that says, oof, like season's just around the corner. So it's fun because it gets guys emulating kind of like what a game day experience would be, at least as best we can until the season. So we just had that. So we've kind of hit a new high in terms of like preseason, which is cool.
Definitely. It's at that point where all that effort, all the hard work that the team's put in is kind of come to fruition now. You get to see where you actually are in shape and, you know, what you're looking like on the field. Share with me a little bit more of what the off season for an Alleycats organization looks like. What kind of practice are the guys putting in? What are you running for this team? How much planning goes into it? Just give me an overview of what that process looks like.
We left last season in August, and I try to give as much downtime as I can because some guys go on to the club season. Some guys go on to nothing, just total decompression. Some guys, it's straight back to family life and work life, right? So I try to meddle as least as I can. That means as few emails as I can, as few texts and phone calls, really until the new year. That gives them a chance to get some needed rest. But many of them still do work out. That's not anything the team mandates. That's not anything we structure or program for them. That's just something that most of those guys know they need to do. Our programming really begins in January. That's with tryout. And then we try to get together on average one weekend a month from January through the start of the season. That's for in-person practicing. We'll do some ad hoc events for, you know, it could be like some like a learning session in the gym for fitness related things, or could be just a straight workout. And then we also try to meet somewhat regularly on Zoom. And those are more strategic folks. So we think about that like, hey, let's get the whiteboarding, the theory, the talking out of the way. So that way, when we have our one weekend a month where we're in person ready to run, like we're maximizing that time in a physical way. We've done as much of the theory and the learning as we can ahead of time. So that's really the high and low of what our scheduling looks like.
I like how you mentioned just that level of work, and that made me think of Cam Brock, where he says, you know, training for the next season starts the day after that season ended. So, you know, he was in the gym all the fall and continuing on putting the work in. And that's just testament, I think, to obviously his character, but what the organization pushes for too. There's a certain level of standard of excellence, I think, that comes out of the Alleycats. So I appreciate the kind of the overview there. Would you share a little bit more from a coaching standpoint? You mentioned obviously a lot of that theory, a lot of talking through. I think that understandably comes first and foremost from the coach. What does that look like on your end, trying to scheme up things, plan things? You look at old film, try to set new goals. What does that side of things look like?
I guess I really gave you the schedule as far as players are concerned, but I didn't really give you the schedule as far as coaching is concerned. What we did this last offseason was I hosted two very informal, what I call kind of subcommittees. One was for recruiting, and the other was for strategy. And recruiting is pretty simple. Just picture like a digital Kanban board or you know, a board where we pin up people's photos. And it's just kind of, hey, what are all the names that we'd be interested in? Who's around? Who do we know through our collective networks? It could be club or people we used to live near or whatever that we want to talk to. The other subcommittee, it's much more methodical. It's saying, let's develop real problem statements from the prior season. So, and this is not unique to us, but for example, hey, the more we get stuck on the sideline, the harder it is, right? The less effective we are. So in what circumstances is that happening? Against which teams? That's really what we notice the most. Against which teams is that happening the most? And what do we need to change in our stuff to combat that? So it's taking like very granular problem statements, collecting all those and trying to bubble them up into what are we doing differently this year? For me, as much as I love playing Frisbee, I love like 10 times more this kind of stuff. It's luckily for me, it's just how my mind is wired. So for me, like thinking about this stuff all off season, I don't mind at all. I love it. And luckily there's some players that wanted to participate this off season too. So it looks like a lot of that, a lot of discussion, breaking down, like I don't watch film carte blanche, but I look at like, what were the moments where we struggled, right? And trying to break those down. And then it's really just thinking. I'll think through things 100 times in my mind and find 3 things I like. We'll try, you know, all 3 of those at practice and realize that anywhere from 0 to 3 of those were good ideas. And the ones that weren't, we just throw them out and we recycle and we repeat the same process, right? And start over and experiment some more new ways. So the preseason for me is where I do a lot of thinking, but the off season is where I do a lot of thinking, but the preseason is fun because this is, I call it like our test kitchen. I mean, we're for every, like I said, 3 things we try, but we'll keep 1. But out of that process, we really do get some good nuggets.
What I think is really unique about your case is that you did used to play for the Alley Cats as a player. You know, you're there at the very beginning of the organization, beginning of the then AUDL in 2012. And I think that would probably add maybe a little bit extra weight or specialness to the history of the organization. But it also puts you in an interesting mindset, I think, because you can directly relate to what the players are going through on the field. And I'm sure that would probably help you kind of come up with this off-season plans. How can I best help my athletes? Because you were then at one point one of those athletes. How has that kind of helped you become a better coach? From one going from a player to now coaching that very same team you used to play for?
To be honest, it's not like you think it would be. For example, I was a role player. I mean, I think I was a good player, but like I tell everyone here, I was good at everything. I was great at nothing. And that was my curse. That's kind of why I fell into being a role player. I liked exercising. I liked playing Frisbee, but I didn't love it. I didn't love the grind of working out. A lot of players do, and they kind of have to. Plus, the league has changed so much in the last 12 years. So for me, none of my playing experience is super relevant, nor do I think it lends me a ton of credibility as a coach. And that's what I tell the guys. I said, hey, you know, my experience, like I've played at this level, but I don't think that's what makes me a good coach. I think what makes me a good coach is, you know, all these other things. So really, it's much less relevant than you think, but it is fun nonetheless. I mean, it's nice to know that I did get to participate in the league on 2 different levels. You know, I'm glad I had that opportunity. And what's fun too is I actually played with some of the guys who are still playing today. So that's kind of fun to see it come full circle. And for those guys too, I'm very thankful that they respect my position here, knowing that, you know, we all kind of came up together.
So you had that stint as a player, and then you moved right into that coaching role we're talking about so much now, as an assistant coach for a couple of years. Tell me a little bit about that period of your time with the Alley Cats.
Yeah, I loved it. I was the assistant coach and defensive coordinator. And what I loved about that is I was empowered to be very experimental. And we were doing things that by today's standards would be commonplace. But back then, I think we were pioneering in a few ways. not nearly as much as, say, a Madison. I mean, Madison, to me, they were, I would sort of salivate over the things they would invent and try and copycat as much as I could. But yeah, even statistically, some of the things we measured as a defense, D-line conversion percentage and things, I mean, that was well before, like, it was talked about across the league. And so I think that was fun for us because we were cooking up and thinking of things that were a little bit ahead of the time. You know, we were still an okay team, but we like to think that those strategic advantages were maybe what sort of helped give us an edge, right? When stacked up against teams of equal or better talent. So that was really cool. And a lot of that stuff, like I said, it stuck with the team, some of those things for the better. So it's fun to see me like come back into this role and see, oh, some of the vocabulary is still the same, or some of the concepts, like we're still thinking about things and creating mental models in some of the same ways.
You mentioned there how during that time when you were assistant coach, your focus was on the defensive side of the disc. Now that you've entered this head coach role, do you find yourself gravitating towards the defensive side, or have you had to really stretch your knowledge or stretch your expertise of the sport to kind of coach a more holistic approach? How has that mindset been for you?
It's been different year to year. Last year, I brought in a good friend, Kyle Cox, who was a long time, probably 10 year or more Alley Cat. And he coordinated the offense for us. That's what he's really good at. I was really good at the defense. And so it was a natural division of roles. Now that said, like we were more than happy to play in each other's sandboxes. And that happened some. This year it's different. We are, you know, as you guys will see shortly, we're kind of reinventing ourselves offensively. We've had the same system for, you know, 12 years almost. And this year's going to look a little different. That's one place where I think I excel. Taking concepts that are new or foreign, distilling them, digesting them, communicating, marketing, documenting that thing to the players in ways that they can consume, understand, implement. So it's been a little bit necessary for me to get far more involved with the offense this year, both because of Kyle's departure and also because of the new things we're trying. So I've really leaned in and it's fun. I do think that what's interesting too is If I spend time thinking about defense again today, I'm better at it than I was a year ago, because now I like it's that much quicker in my mind. Oh, here's what the offense is going to do, right? Here's how they're going to be thinking. So it's definitely helpful to be having spent time thinking about both sides of the ball, because they sort of help you. One helps the other.
And it's, well, you are the head coach and you do make the ultimate calls and decisions here. You mentioned Kyle Cox has been there to help you last year, and you have different assistant coach this year. You have Dan Cunningham and Ben Iver to also assist in this process, and they add their own valuable insight as well. Talk to me and describe that balance between your assistant coaches. Well, I'm sure it's, again, different. Last year was just two, and now there's three of you guys total in the coaching staff here. What is that dynamic? How has it been so far this preseason?
I was raised to believe, really through my professional career, that perfect alignment and same ways of thinking can be a blind spot for an organization. So I totally embrace a healthy amount of conflict. In fact, we had a call one evening this week with some players and coaches. And we as coaches, kind of like you see two rams on National Geographic, like bucking their horns, right? We started doing that. And I paused and I said, hey, by the way, I explained exactly what I just did to you. I said, this is how, you know, we create diamonds, is through pressure, right? And so don't be afraid. Like, you guys jump into the fray here too. So, you know, luckily we've got that, and we've got myself and two assistants who are happy to, you know, discuss and debate, but do it in a collaborative way with best intentions. And then on a strategic and personal level, we do bring some different things to the table, which is great. Dan, our assistant coach, is, you know, think of him effectively as CEO for a chain of coffee shops. So he spends his days in part working with 116 to 26-year-old baristas, you know, and it could be hey, I'm trying to get through college and my phone screen is broke and blah, blah, blah. You know, in dealing with somebody in that mental state, all the way to a 16-year-old girl who's shitty because, you know, Karen's now dating her ex-boyfriend, whatever. So his EQ is just off the charts. That's something that he brings, you know, really special. And as you can imagine, when you've got 30 dudes on a roster working really hard, they really want to play. And they've got constant anxiety about, well, what's my role? What do you expect from me? You know, where can I play? And so Dan's expertise there has been super helpful navigating just interpersonal issues. You know, Ben is a longtime Empire D-line captain and player, and won a championship and had his number retired there. So he brings a wealth of strategic knowledge too, and now leads his own startup here. So he's got, again, kind of like Dan, sort of this entrepreneurial mindset where he can think about road mapping, planning, goal setting, things like that. So it is cool. We've got some guys who either were or are great players, but have all this other experience outside of Ultimate. And that's really, I think, what makes us a good team is we're able to kind of bridge the strategic, the interpersonal, the organizational, and be effective with all those things as a staff.
It sounds like a very special dynamic. It's not a dynamic that just happens to be. I think it takes a lot of effort. And I think the role of leadership, the role of a coach or a captain, is a self-sacrificing role in its nature, because you are looking out for the people around you. You'd give the example of one of your coaches there of being aware of everyone, the interpersonal relations, the skills, your players being anxious about playing time. That's so much to do. You're sacrificing yourself and say, how can I help my team? How can I help my staff be a little bit better and better? So kind of in that same light of things, share with me personally, how do you view your role as a coach of the organization?
That's a bigger question than maybe it appears on the surface. I think you got to be true to your personality. You know, I know a lot of people here would say I'm a servant leader, I'm a this or that, right? I think the reality is, I talk to any of my loved ones, they'll tell you I'm to a fault, maybe direct. And I believe objective, but you know, on the surface, like what you see is what you get. I think that, again, it's interesting. Dan, our assistant coach, told me once, he said, it's interesting watching you talk at practice, because some players are still, like players who don't know me well enough yet, they're looking to read between the lines and they're confused because they can't figure out what you're saying between the lines. They just haven't learned yet that there is no between the lines with Drew. Like, he's just telling them like it is. So I think that's what I give. Like, you know, when the league talks about Indy's roster, it's that, hey, we've had the same offensive line for the last 6, 8, 10 years, right? I think one thing that I am as a coach is I'm willing to experiment and try new things. That's with different personnel, different systems. I've not been bashful with those guys this preseason to say, hey, you are all 1 year older. Amongst you, there are three more babies. How are we going to be better as a team, you know, without something changing? Your workouts, new bodies on that line, new systems, like something's got to change, because otherwise, right, we can't be a better team. I think that I'm just really willing to take guys who, in any other aspect of life or Ultimate, are my peers, and not be bashful about, you know, I think just calling it like it is and making hard decisions and things like that. I also think, like, I'm a big tinker. I think the guys would tell you that that's perhaps one thing I bring is a willingness to experiment and be wrong strategically. You know, and I'm learning too. I'm learning that. So again, the one thing I haven't said is the couple things I haven't said, you know, I'm a friend first. I'm a servant leader, right? It's not that I'm bad with emotional stuff. I just, that's not my strength. And so it's hard for me to lean into that. But it's certainly something I'm conscious of and try to pay attention to as well. Damn, listen to me. I sound like some cold-hearted robot coach. But, you know, I think the reality is, like, I just know myself and I know what I'm good at and what I bring to the team. So I try to focus on that while still growing myself in some other ways. if that makes any sense.
Definitely a big question. I appreciate unpacking there that on your end and sharing your side of that there. Now, we've hinted this a little bit throughout this conversation so far about talking the preseason and planning, and part of that is goal setting, right? I think it's really important to have a vision or direction of where a group of people are going, in this case, the Alley-Cats. So obviously, we all like to win, and I'm sure every team out there, their goal is always to win a championship. Most teams, all but one, will not do that this year. In your case, I think there, or any case, any team, I think there needs to be other measures of success along the way, right? Maybe it's the growth of an individual, growth of a group, or a strategy, or an offense or defense. In your case here, what are some ways that you're measuring success in this upcoming season?
I listened to, it would have been the Ringer pod once last season, where somebody from Oakland talked about the 3-year vision that their team had. And I was thinking, man, I've always wondered, you know, like, shouldn't we do something like that for the Cats? And never did. And then again, Ben, our assistant coach, who's now doing a lot of this for his kind of venture-backed startup here in Indy, he asked the same question when he came on this year. He's like, what's our roadmap here? And I thought, well, we don't have one, admittedly. Do you think we should? I've thought about this. And so that's what we've done. And so now we have, you know, a draft that we've shared with the team for our 3-year vision, which does, it culminates in a championship. But we recognize that there are a lot of steps between here, right, and that top floor. So those things for us, some of them are metric driven. And we want to take our hold rate, for example, to 72.5% this year, you know, from where it was last year, or our break rate up to 34% this year. There's also some, you know, somewhat qualitative, somewhat quantitative things. Like, we want to be the preferred destination in the Midwest, or at least across a few states for Ultimate. Especially, you know, you'd like to say, hey, the best players, I want them to play here. But the reality is some players still prefer club and simply are not going to play professionally. So we do say, hey, within those that are willing to play professionally, like, how do we be the magnet versus Pittsburgh, right? Versus a Chicago or other teams in the area. So there's some of those type of things, you know, and there are some more warm and fuzzy type things in there, I'll call them, that we're conscious of too. I mean, well, I shouldn't say that anymore. I was gonna say nobody makes a living. Some guys do make a living these days. Nobody on our team makes a living from this, which means it is a sacrifice for them. So we want to make sure that this is an experience that for the players is worth coming back to every year. So we're, you know, that part of that's rolled into our goals as well.
I like it. You mentioned that sacrifice piece there. And that's, again, most of the organization has to sacrifice things to play in the UFA. And you have a full-time job, you have a wife, you have a kid. There's sacrifices they have to make for this. And that's not, again, not something that people are unfamiliar with. If you could share a little about trying to find a balance between those things, trying to find a balance between work, home life, and also this crazy commitment that we've been talking about here this whole time of Ultimate Frisbee. How do you strike a balance between those things?
Well, I'll give you my answer, and then you should do an episode with my wife, and she'll give you a very different answer probably. But I try to set aside time throughout the week for specific things. So for example, our coaches group meets once a week, and that's an extended meeting. And we use a specific meeting for that. And there's a document that's, you know, available to those guys. So we lob things, questions, problems, ideas onto there. And it's like a parking lot, because without that, we'd be texting each other all day, every day. You know, some text chains, some email chains, some phone calls, some chicken scratch on a piece of paper. That allows us to sort of compartmentalize. So I can, in the back of my mind, chew on these things, but I don't have to stress those other guys with it until we're there to meet. So I think it's about building some time that allows you to address the team-related things you need to, but doesn't really cannibalize the rest of your life. Apart from that, I mean, it just does take time. So like for me, our oldest, you know, is in bed hopefully by 8 on a good night. And, you know, so that means like the things I want to do, luckily they can be, if I'm watching film, I can do that anytime. So it's just kind of saving an hour in the evening for it. So instead of, you know, picking a new show for me to binge watch, that's just how I spend my free time during the season. You know, so it kind of, you could think of this like a hobby for me in the sense that, you know, other hobbies, joining a bowling league, you know, binging a show, whatever, like I just don't get to do those right now, but it's because, you know, this is my fun time.
At this point, I've been doing this podcast for about 11 months, and you're the first person or the fourth person that's come on that is familiar with or been involved with the Alley Cats. I mentioned Cam Brock, mentioned Will Weddingale, and then Kip Curtis used to play years ago. And then you here are the fourth. And every time I've had these conversations, there's an air that comes off about the culture or the community that surrounds Alley Cats. It's a very friendly, it's very welcoming. I've been to the game, like I mentioned, that was a fantastic experience. Could you share a little bit about the culture of the Alley Cats? What drives it? Why is it this friendly organization that draws these people in, high caliber, high quality people like Ben on this podcast? Could you just share with me from your viewpoint of the culture?
It's interesting. So geographically, like Indy has an advantage, and we know that if you draw a line between Indy and let's say Carolina and Atlanta and maybe Dallas, right? There's sort of this giant no man's land in between. And so I think each group sort of benefits from that in different ways. But we've kind of become a magnet for like some of Ohio and Kentucky. And at times guys from Tennessee. And to a man, like they'll join the team and it's like, wow, like this is like way more welcoming than I ever thought it would be. You know, it's like, well, okay, what did you think you were getting into? Like, you know, we're not Monsters R Us here. So we've had like consistently good feedback from guys new to the team or guys not in state, which is great. And I don't honestly know what to attribute that to. I've got to think that, like, when I think about some of the fathers of the Alley Cats, if you will, I think it helps that some of those guys are still on the team, you know, Cam Brock and Travis Carpenter, and some have just recently retired, or some of the guys that entered, you know, in the second, third, or fourth season, a Levi Jacobs or a Rick Gross or a Nick Hutton, you know, guys like that. I think it's that, you know, there is that through line, and I like to think of guys like, you know, Kyle Cox or Jared Payne or you know, Scott O'Brien, like some of the guys from the very beginning were generally good about including others and wanted to drive a team atmosphere and team environment. So I feel like from the early years of the team, there was an expectation that like, hey, we're a group and a team. I hear a lot about like, we won't name drop here, but I've heard a lot about other teams in other cities. Like it could be club or pro where you go to practice and then afterwards it's like, okay, I'll see you in 1 week. Like it was nice to meet you, handshake, goodbye. It's like, wait, you guys don't like hang out, you know, like grab a beer, you don't like, you know, see each other on the weekend. Like, so I don't know. I wonder if that's maybe just a regional kind of thing where it's like here, like your teammates are also your friends, are all the guys you go disc golf with or play board games with or shoot the shit on Slack with during work, right? Like maybe that's just something unique to the Midwest or Indy. I'm not sure why that doesn't exist more elsewhere.
Definitely a culture of Midwest niceness out there, Midwest kindness, but it's evident. And you know, listen to the other guys talk about it, there is something unique and special about that. And it's really special and it is growing and growing. Talking about growth here, very common question I pose to people is their take on the growth of the UFA in recent years. And you've been a part of the UFA, been part of ADL for years now. But if you could speak specifically to the growth of Ultimate in Indianapolis, the team's been there since the beginning. Have you seen this community just embrace more and more of the Frisbee culture there? Or do you think it's still struggling and still fighting to have a home in Indy?
So this is where you're going to start to get a dose of direct Drew, if you will.
Let's hear it.
I think anybody that comes out to the game loves it. And a lot of people are like, holy smokes. Like I've heard, like I knew about Ultimate, but I didn't know it existed like this. And or I'll show them a YouTube video. I'm waiting for some pickup at a barbecue restaurant. And there's two ladies, you know, having drinks and strike up a conversation and like, oh, what's that? And so I said, well, hey, do you have YouTube on your phone? She says, sure. So we pull up a highlight vid. She's like, oh my God. She's like, where do you guys play? Right. So anytime you talk to somebody, like they're all about it. I don't think there's a cold reception at all. I honestly think, and I'm kind of on record saying this before, like, I think the league has a number of things it needs to address in terms of the product itself. I think going Saturday at 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. or 8 p.m. for tip-off for a UFA game puts you in contention with the best of people's entertainment times. And you got to have a really good product in order to compete with the movie theater or the bars or, you know, a friend's house for dinner. So I think that's just really ambitious of our league, and I'm not sure it's the most strategic. The other thing is, basketball didn't have a 3-point line until it did, right? That game evolved, and there are some folks within the organization who I've chatted with very informally, I think, who are visionary in the sense that I think they, like me, recognize for this thing to continue to be commercially viable, like, the game's going to have to change, and it's not going to look like what we grew up playing college with, even more so than it does today, right? Double teams and 7-second stall. Like, there's got to be more meaningful shifts in order to make it high impact and more entertaining. The folks that I spoke to at the league, like, they sense a little bit of reluctance among the players, actually, to continue to have our league diverge, like, a ton more from, say, the WFDF or USAU version of the game. And I think that's something, like, if that's actually the case, I think the league's got to get over it, because I think that I'm trying to answer your question, like, the warmth and the growth around Indianapolis. I think people are looking at Ultimate and saying, hey, that's really cool, it's really fun, but, like, I think it's got to be a punchier product, a more exciting product than it is today before it's going to see, like, the type of traction that people dream of.
Do you see that the current trajectory of where it is now, it's going to eventually cap out or get a little stagnant unless there is that change to propel something forward? Is that kind of the image you're painting here?
Well, I guess I'll lead with this. Like, I probably have no freaking clue. But if I'm here to guess, which is what any of us are doing, I think the product as is would be more watchable in 10 years simply by virtue of, you know, there being more athletic participants, higher levels of individual talent. The reason we have so many professional American football leagues is because, like, the NFL just is only so big, and there are more talented football players than can live in one league, right? So our league probably couldn't support that today because there's not enough, the depth of talent across the country just isn't there. But I think, like, as it gets there, and you know, young people learn about this at a younger age or take it more seriously, or it becomes more commercially viable to pay people, right, to have full-time training for this, like, I think the product as is could get better with more talented players. But that's kind of a long-term, gradual, slow burn improvement versus step change from schematically, like, changing the game, changing the rules, things like that.
Definitely. All right, Drew, I'm looking for a piece of advice now. We've talked about how you kind of got your background in a lot of this in the defensive side of the disc. So we've also mentioned your mind kind of shifts there a lot. So in that light of that here, if you want to offer a piece of advice to a player that's trying to develop their defensive IQ or defensive game, what would you share?
I'm trying to come up with something that's actually helpful. I mean, get blocks is what comes to mind. That's what matters. Now, obviously, like, telling someone to do that probably isn't helpful. They need something different that's going to help them achieve that. I would say this, like, in any sport, some of the rules are the same. Those rules being speed kills. You can never have enough fitness, things like that. We've got a kid who's a college kid. I'm going to pick on him a little bit. He's 4'0". He probably weighs about as much as my left big toe. But he is the fastest guy you know. And guess who gets blocks? Jack does. He's got something in spades, which he can give to the team versus someone like me. Like, I was a good thrower. I was a good runner, good defender, good offender. But, like, I wasn't great at any one thing. I think you got to have that something that you excel at more than anybody else to really like kind of find a niche. So, you know, fitness, if you can get it, like that's a gimme. Otherwise, I suppose it's just, I mean, reps obviously will help, right? The more reps you get, the savvier you'll become. But I think it's figuring out like where on the field can you make your plays? And I don't always love the idea of players baiting per se, but it's understanding what am I good at and where can I take my gambles? Which positions on the field, like for where the disc is, for example, if they just received the pull, I can take a big gamble as a defender. And if I'm wrong, you know, the consequences are usually not fatal. If we're in the red zone and I try something and I miss and I'm way out of position, the consequences could be really fatal. So I think it's kind of learning, like there are some phases of a point or some parts of the field where you can start to experiment. And so it's just being smart about where those are. And then learning, you know, where, hey, I should buckle down and just play solid person defense here. But take advantage of those moments where you can afford to get creative and see if that doesn't, you know, your experimentation there doesn't teach you something that you can maybe apply on other parts of the field.
Wow, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for sharing that. And Drew, this kind of brings us to close the interview. I just want to open it up, though. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
Wow, open stage. I guess just no, I'll just say thanks to the guys at the Alley Cats for letting me do this. I definitely love it, you know, and to my family as well for letting me do it. I'd like to think that I work hard and do a good job, but it certainly is a team effort. And so part of that is people just trusting me and kind of letting me do my thing and also, you know, helping me get better at it. So I appreciate all those folks. My only other message, I guess, would just be to players, you know, within 1, 2, 3 states of us, like we take this, I think, as seriously as any team out there. I think we are as sharp as any team out there. And I think we've proven that in, you know, certainly last season, in other recent years as well. You know, and we're looking for folks that can ball. So if that's you, like, by all means, find us, right? Like we, our ownership as well, like they're hungry. And Tim, our primary owner here, like he'll tell you, like, he's ready to win a championship. He's been ready and waiting a long time. So, you know, we're here to certainly make it work with the right players. You know, we'd welcome that conversation.
Love it, Drew. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for sharing your story, and especially just taking us to dive into what makes the Alley Cats click. And honestly, just wishing you guys the best of luck this upcoming season. And I really appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thanks, David.
Of course. And for everyone out there, make sure you check out the Alley Cats on Instagram as their season kicks off here in just a few weeks. And as always, make sure you check out the Breakside on Instagram at Breakside_podcast. And this brings us to the end of episode 48. This is David Adamitis with Drew Shepherd of the Alley Cats. Thanks for listening. Have a great night.